Chapter 12. Conclusion. The schoolmaster's widow, hurrying off to Pavlovsk, had gone straight to see Darya Alexeyevna, who was agitated by the events of the previous day, and telling her all that she knew threw her into a regular panic. The two ladies decided at once to get into communication with Lebediev, who, as a householder and a friend of his lodger, was also in agitation. Vera Lebediev told them all that she knew. By Lebediev's advice, they decided to set off to Petersburg, all three together, in order as quickly as possible to prevent what might very easily come to pass. So it came about that at about 11 o'clock next morning, Rogozhin's flat was broken open in the presence of the police, of Lebediev, of the ladies, and of Rogozhin's brother, Semyon Semyonovich, who lived in the lodge. Matters were greatly facilitated by the evidence of the porter that he had seen Parfion Semyonovich the previous evening going in at the front door with a visitor and seemingly in secret. For 2 months Rogozhin was prostrate with inflammation of the brain, and he was tried as soon as he recovered. He gave straightforward, exact, and fully satisfactory evidence on every point, in consequence of which, from the very first, Mushkin's name was not brought into the case. Rogozhin was taciturn during his trial. He did not contradict his adroit and eloquent counsel, who proved clearly and logically that the crime committed was a consequence of the brain fever which had set in long before its perpetration, as a result of the troubles of the accused. But he added nothing of his own to confirm that contention, and as before, clearly and precisely maintained and recollected the minutest circumstances connected with the crime. In view of extenuating circumstances, he was sentenced to only 15 years penal servitude in Siberia, and heard his sentence grimly, silently, and dreamily. All his vast fortune, except the comparatively small part that he had squandered in the first few months of debauchery, passed to his brother, Semyon Semyonovich, to the great satisfaction of the latter. Rogozhin's old mother is still living, and seems from time to time to remember her favourite son, Parfion, though only vaguely. God has saved her mind and her heart from the knowledge of the blow that has fallen on her melancholy house. Lebediev, Keller, Ganya, Titsin, and many of the other persons of our story go on living as before and have changed but little. There is scarcely anything to be said about them. Ippolit died in a state of terrible excitement, somewhat sooner than he had expected, a fortnight after the death of Nastasia Philipovna. Kolya was greatly affected by what had happened. He attached himself more closely than ever to his mother. Nina Alexandrovna is uneasy at his being too thoughtful for his years. He may become an active and useful man. Among other things, the arrangement of Mushkin's future was partly due to his efforts. He had long before noticed Yevgeny Pavlovich Radomsky as different from the other persons he had made friends with of late. He was the first to go and tell him all he knew about the case and Mushkin's present condition. He was not mistaken in his estimate of him. Yevgeny Pavlovich took the warmest interest in the luckless idiot's fate, and by his care and efforts, Mushkin was taken back to Dr. Schneider's in Switzerland. As Yevgeny Pavlovich has gone abroad and intends to spend a long time in Europe, openly declaring that he is a superfluous man in Russia, he visits his sick friend at Schneider's pretty often, at least once every few months. But Schneider frowns and shakes his head more ominously every time. He hints at a permanent derangement of the intellect. He does not yet say positively that recovery is out of the question, but he allows himself phrases suggestive of most melancholy possibilities. Yevgeny Pavlovich takes this very much to heart. He has a heart, which is evident from the fact that Kolya writes to him, and that he even sometimes answers him. Another curious fact is known about him, and as it shows a kindly trait in his character, we hasten to mention it. After every visit to Dr. Schneider, Yevgeny Pavlovich, besides writing to Kolya, sends a letter to another person in Petersburg, giving the most sympathetic and minute account of Mushkin's state of health. Together with the most respectful expression of devotion, those letters sometimes, and more frequently, contain a frank statement of views, ideas, and feelings. In fact, something approaching a feeling of warm friendship is revealed by them. The person who is in correspondence with him, though the letters are not very frequent, and who has won so much attention and respect from him, is Vera Lebedev. We've never been able to ascertain how such relations arose between them. No doubt they began at the time of Mushkin's breakdown, when Vera Lebedev was so distressed that she fell positively ill. But exactly what incidents brought about his acquaintance and friendship, we do not know. We have alluded to these letters chiefly because they contained news of the Epanchins, and especially of Aglaya. Of her, Yevgeny Pavlovich wrote in a rather disconnected letter from Paris that after a brief and extraordinary attachment to an exile, a Polish count, she had suddenly married him against the wishes of her parents, who had only given their consent at last because there were possibilities of a terrible scandal. Then, after almost 6 months' silence, Yevgeny Pavlovich gave his correspondent a lengthy and detailed account of how, on his last visit to Dr. Schneider's, he had met there Prince S. and all the Epanchin family, except, of course, Ivan Fyodorovich, who was kept in Petersburg by business. It was a strange meeting. They had all met Yevgeny Pavlovich with extraordinary delight. Adelaida and Alexandra were unaccountably grateful to him for his angelic kindness to the unhappy prince. Lizaveta Prokofievna wept bitterly at the sight of Mushkin in his afflicted and humiliated condition. Obviously everything had been forgiven him. Prince S. had made a few just and true observations. It seemed to Yevgeny Pavlovich that Adelaida and he were not yet in perfect harmony, but that inevitably, in the future, Adelaida would, spontaneously and ungrudgingly, allow her impetuous temper to be guided by Prince S.'s good sense and experience. Moreover, the painful experiences the family had been through, especially Aglaya's recent adventure with the exile, had made a profound impression upon her. Everything that the family had dreaded in giving Aglaya to the Polish count had within 6 months come to pass, together with fresh surprises of which they had never dreamed. It turned out that the count was not even a count, and if he were really an exile, it was owing to some dark and dubious incident in the past. He had fascinated Aglaya by the extraordinary nobility of his soul, which was torn with patriotic anguish, and fascinated her to such a degree that even before she married him, she became a member of a committee for the restoration of Poland, and had, moreover, visited the confessional of a celebrated Catholic priest, who gained a complete ascendancy over her mind. The vast estates of the Polish count, of which he had given Lizaveta Prokofievna and Prince S. almost incontestable evidence, turned out to be a myth. What was more, within 6 months of the wedding, the count and his friend, the celebrated confessor, had succeeded in setting Aglaya completely against her family, so that for some months they had not even seen her. There was, in fact, a great deal to say, but Lizaveta Prokofievna, her daughter, and even Prince S. had been so much distressed by all this terrible business that they were reluctant even to allude to some points in conversation with Yevgeny Pavlovich, though they were aware that he already knew the story of Aglaya's latest infatuation. Poor Lizaveta Prokofievna was longing to be back in Russia, and according to Yevgeny Pavlovich's account, she was bitter and unfair in her criticism of everything in Europe. "They can't make decent bread anywhere. In winter they are frozen like mice in a cellar," she said. "Here, at any rate, I've had a good Russian cry over this poor fellow," she added, pointing to Mushkin, who did not even recognize her. "We've had enough of following our whims. It's time to be reasonable. And all this life abroad, and this Europe of yours is all a fantasy, and all of us abroad are only a fantasy. Remember my words. You'll see it for yourself," she concluded almost wrathfully, as she parted from Yevgeny Pavlovich.